Okay, so I guess my first question would really be, from your view, do you think that there has been a change in civil society through the years, and do you think that's for good or for bad?
I would even go back further. I mean, I would go back to colonial period, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think forms of associational life have obviously evolved, changed, varied from period to period. And I think if you look in the colonial period, what we really saw was the strength of unions. The trade union movement even organized effectively to get candidates into LEGCO, and so on and so forth. Then post-independence, the first Kenyatta government, obviously forms of associational life, citizen associational life, were really suppressed fairly fast,
mm-hmm.
or co-opted. So you saw the massive co-optation of the National Women's Movement, you saw the co-optation of COTU, the umbrella body of. And if you looked at their constitutions, there were direct links to the ruling parties.
Right.
So those forms of associational life sort of ended up being swept into the ruin of single party rule. And other forms of associational life popped up, the co-op movement, which then, had practical goals, operated on trust, really helped sort of farmers organize and engage on issues of, their contribution to the economy, but also, their, I guess, getting optimal prices given the conditions and sort of monopoly situations at the time. And then you sort of come to, also in the Kenyatta One era,
mm-hmm.
student organizing, academic organizing, with the suppression of more leftist political parties and the first sort of waves of political assassinations.
Right.
And I think their, political associational lives shifted to the universities. Obviously big suppression, especially after the coup and the transition to the Moi dictatorship. And let's not lie, the first Kenyatta regime was also a dictatorship.
Right.
And then portions of that, as people sort of went helter-skelter into exile and so on, in the region as well as in Sweden, Norway, Canada,
mm-hmm.
Some of those formed a sort of organized leftist underground,
right.
with an armed wing. And of course the armed wing never really went anywhere, but I think that sort of leftist kernel was really then responsible for, once, there were sort of little openings,
mm-hmm.
the kinds of associational life that we saw towards the end of the Moi dictatorship.
Right.
And they, it's very interesting if you read the debates of people involved in that, because they were sort of party linked or linked to some politicians or some groupings of politicians,
right.
but it really was about what is a leftist agenda for Kenya,
right.
That is holistic in terms of not just political freedoms,
mm-hmm.
but also the organization of the state. And I think what happened then towards the end of the 90s is many of them made a decision to come home, or if they weren't coming home and going into the then opposition, then they made a decision that we need some forms of organization that operate above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so you saw the entry into the scene of sort of above ground, leftist driven organizations that really used the more liberal framing of human rights,
right.
To sort of articulate demands in a way that, we're not, everyone wouldn't sort of, oh my God, freak out, socialists,
right.
what,
mm-hmm.
And the strongest organizations, I think, then, and even now, even though you're saying their heyday has come and gone, were really from that group of people, that group of thinking, that group of whatever. And you saw, and then there was this alliance, I guess, with
mm-hmm.
mainstream faith-based organizations who had the mass mobilizing potential, as
Right.
well as the alliance with the political opposition.
Right.
And I think, you know, long story short and blah, 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 you know, we eventually get to transition from the Moi regime. And at that point, that sort of kernel or that group, I mean, because there were always other forms of associational
Right.
life floating around. It's not like they went away. It was just some were effective, some weren't, some were co-opted, some weren't.
Right.
But the ones who I think of as really the driver and the sort of thinking and where the intellectual energy came from for the push to democracy, then the big debate was, you know, just as previously the debate had been, how does a leftist movement operate above ground? What forms of association do we take? Then the debate became, how do we engage with this transition?
Right.
And that's when you saw, you know, lots of leaders from these organizations went into opposition politics, went into the state. And then you saw lots of the sort of intellectual arm, I would say, also go into the state as advisors, civil servants, and so on and so forth.
Right.
And at that point, the thinking and the debates really were, okay, we've achieved the political kingdom. Now, what can we do around economic, social, cultural rights? How do we engage on the question of, we'll never have a socialist republic, but we can at least have a social democracy. What are the things that we can take up around state responsibility to fulfilling these? And that's where you saw the engagement actually come in.
Right.
And it's interesting, and I really refute the idea that civil society died. I think it was that kernel of it that was serious about sort of its intellectual history, tradition, and legacy. We're really always trying to grapple with, how do we make this state accountable to people?
Right.
And in the absence of sort of egregious, widespread, you know, massacres, assassinations, clampdowns, clashes, then the focus really is how are you meant to run this economy. And I think at that time,
would you think that they were kind of victims of their own success, that they did to a certain extent achieve that political kingdom, as you would say,
Well, I think
2003.
It's not that they were victims of that their success, but I think somehow that, you know, many things happen that around it, I think it's a question of being equipped and tools, right?
Right.
Because the tools you need to engage with the state on, I don't know, civil and political rights violations are quite different than the tools you need to engage on economic, social rights violations
Right.
or advancing that, right? And I think if you looked at that kernel that I'm talking about, the core sort of pro-democracy people, tradition and whatever, for some reason, they were largely kind of lawyers, political scientists, old student activists, whereas during that opening of space towards the end of the Moi regime and in transition, the people that were really working on policy and the people who were really economists were much more middle of the road, if not conservative, right?
Right.
So we had some great economic think tanks that sort of emerged during that period and took up space, and their people were also taking up space, but actually their training, A, they had a different profession, right? And a
Right.
different way of engaging in policy. But even within that profession of being an economist,
Right.
very few of them were leftist
Right.
or even social democratic. I mean, I would say someone like David is a social democrat. Someone like, I don't know, Betty Miner at the time is definitely not. She's a liberal economist.
Right.
Or a policy person. She's not even an economist, but she was running economic space.
Right.
So, you know, then you saw a mushrooming, and I think, you know, different groups and different sort of tendencies had more or less success in terms of engaging the scale of questions of the economy. And then, of course, you know, there were all these political betrayals, you know, then you realize a lot of the big motley crew under the pro-democracy camp were actually just Kikuyu chauvinists,
right.
Who were quite happy with, you know,
yeah, with having
whatever.
A Kikuyu sort of regime
and,
on
you know,
top.
Then we get to 2007. I do think we saw good leadership around the period of 2007, but it was reactive leadership about
Right.
managing a crisis, and then trying to lay the ground and sort of push through some of the old projects of the leftist sort of agenda, transitional justice, the constitutional change stuff, et cetera, and there were successes. So
So the
I'm a
Constitution
bit
was a
more,
success,
I
but
don't buy the line that we had this great movement in the 90s and then we
And
had this,
then right.
you know, wilting away post 2002. I don't think so. I think that there were many things going on.
Right. But you know, one of the things I wonder about is kind of even back then and today, and you've kind of hinted at it, that there were debates about basically how do you do this work. And I'm wondering about how people thought of the function. What was it that they wanted to take power, state power, and then fix what they saw wrong in society? Or was it more about transforming the state, I guess, from without, so that when people do get into compete for power, there are particular rules that we have.
You know, I think maybe way back in the day, in the days of KPU or whatever, you did have people who were organized around a party who tried to take power. And I talked about the unions
Right,
organizing
yes.
to get seats in LECO and Mombasa. I think the leftists became a lot more around, you know, was for sure we weren't going to have an armed struggle, an armed revolution.
Right.
So then, and it's interesting reading the papers and the thoughts of leaders in the movement because that debate was hot. That was the debate. What do we do?
Right.
And I think it was very much, okay, what we can do is engage, push, pressure. Some people were in opposition politics, but many more saw themselves as sort of the intellectual arm, the sort of advisors, the sort of feed in, the thought leaders for the parties, which, as you know, are neither here nor there in terms of ideology
Yeah.
nowadays. And I think that's still the case. And even though, you know, some of the older people have died off or are off the scene completely, when I think about people from that original sort of core, whatever, that's still very much how they engage with politics and have always done. It's sort of they look at who's out there, who most seems to come from our tradition. Okay, we either openly or not openly, privately, will advise, we'll try and get some ideas across, we'll try and get some state, you know, reform ideas across. Because I think that's what they think the limit is, right? Unless, you know, even if you look at sort of what you see as the success of the 90s, to get the mass mobilization, it's not the thinkers that do that. It's alignment with the opposition. It's alignment with the churches and the faith-based movements
Yeah, I mean, I
that
get
enable
that,
them.
but I think I mean, now there seems to be much more, even within the churches, within media, sort of a move to go into electoral politics, you know. So you've got many more people who are willing to or who choose to stand up, and to a large extent, these organizations are now being seen kind of as stepping stones to political
They've
power.
always been stepping stones since the 90s, and I think the big shock of 2007, well, the whole period of 2002 to 2007, was, like I said, realizing a number of people in the big tent were basically Kikuyu nationalists, or they were liberals, or not even liberals, conservatives, who for them, it is a step, civil society, civic organizing has always been a stepping stone, whether you're talking about unions, whether you're talking about the women's movement and women's rights organization, in fact, particularly for women, because the space for them in mainstream political parties is so limited, the ways women get onto a national scene and get a national, that's always been there. That's always been there. That sort of instrumentalization of civic space. And maybe it's not just instrumentalization. Some people do choose to serve and to go for it. Yeah. And then also don't forget, I mean, you can tell I'm a bit cynical. Sort of the payback for being in public office has vastly improved
Yeah, I
post
mean, true it
2002.
has.
I mean, to be a civil servant in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s was a labor of love, man. You can't survive on public service, you know,
Well, but it could be
money.
argued the same thing with
Money
NGOs
talks.
and stuff, that it's become quite lucrative, you know, and not as much as It's not
Sure.
the dangers, I would say, are kind of diminished
Yeah,
now.
no, sure. And that's also, as you know, it's been a debate in the sort of civic space, civic movements for a while. Who's here because it's a space where professionals who, yeah, have some sort of care for society, but a lot of people are not there because they're motivated by desire for systemic structural change. It's just sort of,
Yeah, but even
you
when we
know,
think
here's a job.
of systemic structural change, and I think I want to go back to the relationship with the state and what then should happen. I mean, I think for lots of the time when you had kind of this division that you talked about between kind of the thinkers within civil society and the politicians, sort of the you had opposition politicians, and it was seen almost as different. I think civil society had legitimacy and brought in sort of a public legitimacy that politicians don't necessarily have. And I'm wondering whether we traded that in to get power now. I don't know whether that makes sense.
No, I don't think so. I think it's that the narrative that you put up is actually a narrative that's quite widespread and has really taken hold, that 90s were the heyday, everything else has been a downhill kind of. And I don't think that's fair, and I'm really challenging that narrative. I think all of the problems you talk about, the instrumentalization of civil society, the use of it as a stepping stone to power, which, as in the example of women's rights, I think needs to be problematized a bit. All of those, the professionalization of the space, which isn't just their fault, it's a fault of sort of overall the increasing kind of structuralizing, professionalizing of development aid. You know, it's also been forced upon the sector by the means by which they get funding. But in terms of sort of why we don't seem to have the kind of public credibility that we used to have, don't forget, I mean, the kind of pushback against civil society, you know, the armies of bots and trolls and sort of PR online against civil society as a result of its engagement in the 2007 period and after has been intense. And most civil society organizations and certainly individuals don't have that power to sort of hire an army of bots and trolls and big PR firms to do that kind of mis and disinformation. And, you know, a lot more Kenyans get their news, get their views, you know, engage online. And it's worked. So it's not just that there were failings of civil society or of civic leadership. I think there's been an extremely concerted campaign against them. And I think the only reason that campaign has slacked off in the last couple of years or so since the last election is because that army has been turned to sort of political opponents. It's sort of like, oh no, you know, in a way, civil society is out of the spotlight. It's like, okay, that's done and dusted. Now we're using this artillery against each other, right? And partly civil society is like, oh, phew, we're not in the
At least they're not
spotlight
looking at
anymore.
us now.
And then I wanted to come to this phase because I do think this phase is interesting. And I feel it sort of, you know, I've been technically based in the UK for the last 4 years, and I only got back, moved back to Kenya in August. And because my job's been Pan-African, I've been quite sort of deliberate about not overly engaging in Kenya to an extent that I can't do in any of the other countries. So it's interesting, I feel I'm coming back with fresh eyes, and I do feel now that there are new forms of citizen organizing. That are interesting, that are creative, that are very much ideas driven, but they're not ideologically driven, and they're certainly not linked to sort of either mass organizing, i.e., an outside approach, or to policy engagement in a serious way. With some exceptions, obviously, people who are doing court cases or throwing pieces of policy advice in. But I think that dynamic space of younger people, that online space of, you know, pretty good critiques of the state and politics and sort of old school civil society, that's online and it's younger. But it's not it's not organized yet. You know, it's sort of a bunch of individuals online. And like I say, they don't have mass mobilizing, even ambitions. And they don't really have public policy ambitions either. They're just sort of out of the space,
And to a large extent,
turning
they
pretty.
seem to me to be very kind of working on niche issues, so it's not really forming a
Yes.
broad-based a platform. And that, I think, would bring me to the question of whether we needed to have or we need to have more of the old guards kind of mentoring and working with these young upcoming guys to kind of give their movement more the benefit, I suppose, of the experiences that they had before.
You know, it's hard to mentor without the spaces within which to mentor, right? And if you look at most civic organizations now, you know, they're professional outfits. You hire into jobs. You might have an internship program or a volunteer program, but unless you're in the organization and dealing maybe with board members, where's the space? Whereas when I came back in sort of the early 90s, you know, we were in the middle of struggle for second liberation. You know, all you had to do was show up and you'd be deployed here or there. You know, there were mass events happening. You were happy to be a little foot soldier. And, you know, if you're interested, I had great conversations with like people who were trade unionists before independence or, you know, the generation above me, because there were so many opportunities to engage with them and without necessarily being part of them, you know, or part of an institution. And I think the sad thing now is where are the natural spaces where that can happen on an ongoing way? And then when I look at who I consider my peers and sort of my political community, it's because we went through 2007 together. We were meeting all the time, discussing all the time. You know, we had different institutional bases, but we had a collective. We still have that collective. And, you know, and I'm like, where is someone coming up behind me, especially these young, creative,
But I
very
mean,
smart, like people on, where are they meant to build community like that?
yeah, but I mean, just as, for example, you had kind of spaces where you could go and have this kind of loose association. You aren't going into kind of offices or something to meet these guys. You know, you're meeting at movement. It's not that the issues have gone away, and I think it's not that the opportunities for people to organize around an agenda have gone away. And I would argue that we actually have more space to organize now, at least informally, especially online. It's just that it's not happening. And my question, and that's why I'm saying that people who've been there before, who've seen how these movements are kind of organized and they've actually done it here, wouldn't it be better for them to kind of co-opt and work with the new guys like Boni and Jeroti TTC to try and form a more broader movement?
Well, we do. I mean, to be honest, I mean, Juratic is one of my closest friends and has always been. Boniface, of course, I've known through the years as he sort of come up and, you know, and I know he has a mentoring relationship with Willie. Yeah, but I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is or at least this is my experience. Other people may feel differently. Like within the African, Pan-African feminist movement, there is this push around be my mentor, be my mentee. And I'm like, huh? And you know, whenever I think about it, I've had people who really all my life in that space, in the Kenyan space, in the Pan-African space more broadly, have taken an interest in me, but they take an interest because I'm interested. I'm like, how did this happen? Okay, what, you know. Without it ever being formalized, I think I've had lots of people quote unquote mentor me, but it was never in that kind of way. And somehow I react very viscerally when someone's like, "Will you be my mentor?" I'm like, "You've got to be joking. I don't even know what you mean."
I
You know,
know.
but if there, but that's not to say there aren't young people who interest me, who I do spend a lot of time with because I see something in them, and you have to be interested, I think. And you have to, you know, I would say it's partly the problem that our history is not taught, that our history of struggle is not taught, that people don't see it unless you're in it. or they, sort of discount it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. But I think the point I was wanting to make was, for me, the work and being engaged in the work and kind of inserting myself in the work, even when I was not taken seriously, at all. People are like, "Who's this little mixed race chick with her little dreadlocks and her boots?" And I was like, "You complain about brain drain. I'm back. I'm brain game, and you don't want me." It was really hard to be taken seriously, but you do the work, and it's through doing work together that I think those exchanges happen organically. And maybe the problem is we don't have collective work projects where, or spaces where, to get things done, you're interacting, you're exchanging whatever, and then along the way you're learning, you're meeting your peers, you're meeting your seniors, you're meeting people coming up and coming behind you.
Yeah, but I also think
So
in terms of just meeting even just us people, having spaces where guys can sit, have remember the sort of conversations we used to have at Ali's place, when
yeah,
guys would go
just in
there.
a cool kind
Right,
of
yeah.
social, but a little bit more than social way.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so I find like I don't feel like these guys have that. I see Bonnie kinda trying to engineer it, but it still has a ways to go, so it would be really great to see whether that could coalesce into something that might then become more solid. And I think also sort of the old alliances, across with people in the media, etc. So that they actually start getting some grounding in the issues when they actually write about them, which for me seems to be completely lacking,
No, it's
at the
lacking. I
moment.
mean, it's ahistorical the way things are covered.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for this.